We shift from opinion on the aid in dying for the Terminally Ill Act to experience with the issue that it addresses, which my next guest and her husband had to confront. When her husband was diagnosed with one of the most aggressive forms of brain cancer and given months to live, many would say that if legal-assisted suicide was available, well, in that case, the choice basically would be simple. The reality is, in this case, a life would have been cut short, not by months, but by years. Here to present this side of the situation is Kristen Hansen. Thanks for being here today, Kristen.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
And Kristen's also a community relations advocate with Patients Rights Action Fund. Their website is patientsrightsaction.org, and you can find out more about their work. So give us some background about your husband. As I mentioned, he was diagnosed with a serious brain cancer, the most serious, and the life expectancy was relatively short, but say the least, he beat the odds, which maybe gives credence to the idea of attitude adds to health.
Absolutely. So my husband, JJ, was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer back in 2014. He was only 33 years old at the time, and he was told that he had only 4 months left to live. And this is not an issue that either of us would have become involved with had we not experienced firsthand how dangerous these laws can be for terminal patients like JJ. JJ had dedicated his life to serving other people. He was a volunteer fireman, a Marine Corps war veteran, and he actually served under New York State Governors Spitzer and Patterson. And then after JJ was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, he knew he had to help protect other patients from the dangers of assisted suicide. And that's when he became the president of the Patients' Rights Action Fund and dedicated his final days to fighting the legalization of assisted suicide.
I was going to say, too, with the circumstances that happen when you get just a frightening diagnosis, like your husband had, reading and researching, hearing other stories, a lot of terminally ill in states where it is legal take their own life, not for their own relief, but they do it to give relief to those around them. Was that ever something that the regret or the burden that your husband felt that, well, I'm sorry I'm doing this to you?
You know, Chris, there are so many fatal flaws with this legislation, but I know our time is limited. So for us personally, having gone through this, there were three main concerns we had. First, that doctors make mistakes. Clearly with JJ, they made a big mistake in his prognosis. He ended up living 3.5 years. But the second was that the safeguards against depression, patients taking their lives because they're actually depressed with these lethal pills are inadequate. JJ, if this had been legal in New York at the time he was diagnosed, he could have requested the medication and had it on his nightstand. He wasn't depressed at the time, so he would have qualified. And he would have had the lethal pills with him as he questioned if his life was worth living. Now, none of us knew it at the time, but he considered it during the 5th month of treatment when he was going through a physically and emotionally difficult period. He later told us that he asked himself, am I too much of a burden to my family? Is this worth it? Would it just be easier for everyone if I ended my life? Thankfully, JJ didn't end his life, but he realized that if he had had those pills with him in those darkest days, he might have taken them. And you can't undo that. You can't unmake that decision. There's no going back. And many people who consider or go through with assisted suicide have similar fears. If you look at the data from Oregon, where assisted suicide has been legal the longest in the United States, it shows that the main end-of-life concerns that people considering assisted suicide report actually relate to existential suffering, becoming a burden to their family, facing disability, the loss of autonomy. Inadequate pain control, pain and suffering, physical pain never makes it even to the top 5 reasons why people are reporting their requests for assisted suicide.
We're talking with Kristen Hansen, who is speaking out against the proposed aid in dying for the Terminally Ill Act, which is coming up for a vote at the end of this month here in the New Jersey legislature. She's also a community relations advocate for the Patients' Rights Action Fund. Patientsrightsaction.org is their website. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. And you make a valid point, Kristen, too, because the way that the New Jersey bill is structured, which is really almost a carbon copy of Oregon. At this specific point, if these specific conditions are met, then the medications can be given to this specific patient, which doesn't take into account, okay, this is the current point of the conditions. What about a month from now? What about 2 months from now? Those pills are still going to be there. Something could change.
Right. We saw that these laws actually abandon vulnerable patients like JJ, who can experience depression at any point following their diagnosis, not just when they're requesting the medication. But even if you look at the time the request is made, these laws typically say that it's recommended that a doctor refer a patient for evaluation if they suspect that they're depressed at the time they're making the request. Very few patients are actually ever referred to determine whether they are depressed in states where this is legal. If you look at the facts, if you look at the data from Oregon, you see that these laws force physicians who don't specialize in mental health to diagnose mental illness, clinical depression, and other psychological conditions, putting patients at risk of going undiagnosed, untreated, and receiving the means to kill themselves. In 2017, in Oregon, from the Oregon Health Authority data, less than 3% of patients requesting assisted suicide in Oregon were ever referred out for psychological evaluation. But an independent 2006 study found that patients in Oregon who were requesting assisted suicide, actually closer to 25% of them were clinically depressed. And that's a huge disparity of the real number of people who are depressed and making that request and the people who are ever referred out. The really sad part is that that study found that even patients who were clinically depressed were able to, some of them were able to go on and still get the medication.
You make some very valid points, which really need to be a part of the discussion and the deliberation. And certainly for the people who think this is the right step, it's a point to ponder and certainly to not jump into something, because once something is made law, it's very difficult for it even to be changed, never mind to be eliminated if something is found to be at fault with it. Learn more about the work of the Patients Rights Action Fund, which Kristen is a community relations advocate for, is patientsrightsaction.org. And thank you, Kristen, for, again, adding to the debate, which is certainly sensitive for some but necessary for everybody, I think. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much, Chris.